The British viceroy thought it was a ridiculous plan, and he wasn't the least bit concerned about it. He had received the telegram from Gandhi on March 2, 1930. It declared that on the 11th day of this month, I shall proceed to disregard the salt law. The viceroy had done what duty had required him to do. He had officially warned Gandhi not to disobey the law. Now he heard Gandhi was preparing yet another one of his public displays of rebellion, a march to the sea, or something of that nature, where he was going to collect his own salt. What could it possibly accomplish? The viceroy turned his attention to other matters, quite sure the Hindu fanatic's latest escapade would attract the attention of no one. The British salt law forbade the citizens of India from making, selling, or eating any salt that wasn't imported from England. Gandhi felt that salt was a necessity of life, and since it existed in abundance in the waters off India, he thought it criminal that the impoverished Indians should be made to buy it from England. He had protested the salt law unsuccessfully. Now he had a new idea. He set out from his ashram on foot, with 78 of his followers behind him, including the young Jawaharlal Nehru, future Prime Minister of India. His intention was to walk 200 miles to the seacoast, to the town of Dandi. There he would defy the British government by scooping up some seawater into a pan, setting it in the sun to dry, and harvesting the remaining salt. He was 60 years old, his body thin from steady abstinence and repeated fasts, his legs like spindles. It was India's dry season, and the stifling hot sun would beat down on the walkers the whole way. But Gandhi considered it an easy challenge. Less than 10 miles a day, he said, without much luggage, child's play. As Gandhi walked, the people of India came out to join him. Thousands joined in and walked beside him. For 24 days they marched across the winding, dusty roads of India, stopping each night to rest and pray. In every village along the way, the marchers were welcomed with banners and bouquets of flowers. Peasants sprinkled water on the road ahead to keep the dust down, and they scattered leaves and flowers along the way to make the roads easier on bare feet. Reporters from around the world hired cars and followed the procession to the sea, telegraphing headlines back home about the progress Gandhi was making. He arrived in Dandi April 5th, and while thousands of Indian peasants watched and prayed, he leaned over and filled his pan to the brim with the salt water of the Arabian Sea. Then he extracted a pinch of salt and ate it. The salt law had been broken. Gandhi's ritual at Dandi was front-page news throughout the world. Within days, thousands of Indians were flocking to the beaches on the east and west coasts of India and making their own salt. They sold their illegal salt in open markets in the streets of India's major cities, and it didn't end there. Inspired by Gandhi's leadership, they initiated boycotts of many other British products, including textiles. Once again, Mahatma Gandhi had found a peaceful, non-violent, and powerfully effective way to unite his people against the oppression of foreign rule. It was this phenomenal skill, completely unique in the history of world government, that made Gandhi one of the greatest national leaders of the 20th century. His methods of non-violent confrontation and civil disobedience won India its independence, and influenced the philosophy and tactics of many political activists who followed, including Dr. Martin Luther King. He helped advance the consciousness of modern humanity in many ways. He heightened its indignation over colonialism, racism, and violence. And he promoted the idea that political work, or any work in the world, should and could have a spiritual basis. The spiritual life was a life Gandhi was born to. His father was a Hindu, and his mother was a devout disciple of Jainism. Jainism is the most ancient spiritual system of India, and its principles include reverence of all life forms, non-violence, even towards insects, and vegetarianism. Gandhi's mother prayed in the temple every day, took many vows and fasts, and exhausted herself through days and nights of nursing when there was an illness in the family. Gandhi would later say that she was the one person who most influenced him. As a child, he considered her close to saintliness. Gandhi's father was the chief administrator for the Maharaja of Porbandar, a small estate on the western coast of India. The family came from the traditional caste of grocers and moneylenders. In fact, the name Gandhi means grocer. Gandhi was born October 2, 1869, and was given the name Mohandas. He came into the world at the very height of the power of the British Empire. The British had ruled India for almost 3 centuries and had colonized large parts of Africa and Asia. Gandhi was a shy child who was afraid of the dark. The grammar school he attended was so primitive that the students wrote their lessons out in the dust with their fingers. Even when his family moved to a better district and he attended a more modern school, his schoolwork was mediocre. One teacher wrote of him, "Good at English, fair in arithmetic, and weak in geography. Conduct, very good, bad handwriting." His work may not have shown, but his character did, even when he was young. When a teacher suggested he might cheat to impress the school inspector, he adamantly refused. Gandhi was also not a terribly social little boy, and he was poor at school sports. He preferred to spend his time on long, solitary walks when he wasn't helping his parents with chores at home. As was traditional in India at the time, Gandhi's parents arranged a marriage for him when he was only 13. His bride, Kasturbai, was also 13. Later, Gandhi criticized the practice of child marriages and encouraged reform in that area. But at the time, he obediently followed his parents' wishes. Gandhi and Kasturbai had a devoted, committed marriage until her death 62 years later. But early in that marriage, she complained that he was too strict with her. He insisted she seek his permission before visiting her friends or going to the temple. Kasturbai firmly resisted him until he gradually came to see her point of view and relented. After he was married, Gandhi continued to attend school, and Kasturbai continued to live with her parents, as was customary in child marriages. Gandhi went through a period of adolescent rebellion, in which he smoked in secret, wore Western clothes, told lies, stole coins from his brother, professed atheism, and worst of all, ate meat. A friend had convinced Gandhi that his eating meat would make Indians as strong and powerful as the Englishmen. But after eating meat only 5 or 6 times, Gandhi gave it up. His deceits had caused him such torments of conscience and such regret that he made several resolutions then and there, and vowed to keep them his whole life. Shortly after this period, Gandhi's father became ill and died. Then the baby Kasturbai had been carrying also died. Gandhi interpreted both events as a judgment upon his sins, and his resolutions about his moral behavior became even stronger. Later, there would be 4 children who would survive. When he was 18, Gandhi decided to study law in England to prepare himself for government work like his father had done. His first idea had been medicine, but he knew his beliefs would make it impossible to practice vivisection. His mother was opposed to the idea of England. She feared he'd come under bad influences so far away from home. So Gandhi made a solemn vow that he wouldn't touch wine, women, or meat while abroad, and his mother agreed to let him go. Kasturbai had just given birth to a son when Gandhi sailed forth in 1888 for a visit that would last 3 years. Gandhi never felt at home in England. He studied the language and customs, adopted Western clothes and manners, even took dancing lessons to try and blend with English society. Most difficult for him was his vegetarianism. Few people accepted or understood it. He began to frequent vegetarian restaurants, where he made the acquaintance of others who shared his beliefs. He joined and became a leader of the Vegetarian Society, which included such well-known members as George Bernard Shaw and the theosophist Annie Besant. It was his first involvement with an organized group and his first fervent commitment to a cause. While in England, Gandhi also read the Bhagavad Gita, the sacred book of the Hindus, for the first time. He never committed himself to one religion or faith, but he always held special admiration for both the Bhagavad Gita and the New Testament. As soon as he passed his law exams, Gandhi headed back to India. He would return to London almost 40 years later as the leader of the Indian people and as the chief negotiator of their freedom. Back in India, Gandhi found there were too many lawyers and not enough jobs. After a few years of fruitless searching, he accepted an offer to work for an Indian firm in South Africa. It was an offer that would change his life. In South Africa, which was under British control like India, Gandhi came face to face with the horrors and humiliation of racial prejudice. While practicing in court, he was ordered by the magistrate to remove his turban. He refused and marched out of the courtroom. A few days later, he was thrown out of a first-class train compartment because he was Indian and spent the night shivering on a deserted platform and thinking about the other injustices he'd seen. There were 90,000 Indians living in South Africa under British rule. Many lived in terrible conditions and were treated no better than slaves. The incident on the train became Gandhi's moment of truth. It was the moment in which he first felt his deep outrage over injustice, and it was the moment that he decided to take a stand, in whatever way he could, against prejudice and oppression. Shortly after his experience on the train, he had a similar experience on a coach. He was told to sit on the footboard outside the coach to make room inside for a European passenger. When he refused, he was beaten by the driver. As he continued on his journey, he found he was refused in hotel after hotel that catered to Europeans only. After that, the shyness and lack of confidence that so marked his early years was overtaken by his determination and passion. He formed an organization through which Indians could voice their discontent and launch protest campaigns. He began to develop his techniques of nonviolent resistance known as satyagraha, or devotion to truth. Before long, he was the leader of the South African Indian community. He had also successfully resolved the legal cases of his law firm and was now a respected attorney. Although his contract with the company was up after 1 year, Gandhi was persuaded to stay in South Africa by Indians who found his leadership essential to their cause of equality. He agreed. It would be 20 years before Gandhi returned permanently to India. In those 20 years in South Africa, Gandhi perfected his strategy of nonviolent civil disobedience. He led successful petitions against anti-Indian laws, founded a National Indian Congress to oversee the rights and welfare of the Indian community, edited an Indian newspaper, and organized a strike among Indian miners. He also made a brief return to India to publicize and seek support there, and to bring Kasturbai and the children back to South Africa. When he returned to Africa, he was attacked and beaten by a white mob. While recovering at a friend's house, the mob gathered outside and chanted threats to hang him. He escaped in the middle of the night disguised as a police officer. Later, he refused to prosecute his assailants. In spite of his struggle with the British, Gandhi helped organize an ambulance corps of Indians to help them in the war against the South African Boers. He felt that since he was demanding rights as a citizen, he should also fulfill his responsibilities as a citizen. The British rewarded him with a medal for service. Gandhi never attached himself to one religion. He believed instead that all religions were true, but he became fascinated with two Sanskrit words that would cause him to make profound changes in his lifestyle. One word was aparigraha, which meant non-possession. It held that material goods restricted the life of the spirit, and true spiritual progress couldn't occur until the bonds to money and property were broken. The other word or idea was samabhava, or equability. It suggested that people should be detached from pain or pleasure, from victory or defeat, and should work without hope of success or fear of failure. Inspired by these principles, Gandhi felt the urge to simplify his lifestyle and to free himself from bondage to the material. He gave up all his possessions and established a community where he removed himself from his family. His marriage became celibate. He was 36 years old when he vowed never again to have sexual relations with his wife or any other woman. In 1908, when he was 39, Gandhi was arrested for resisting a new British order that all Indians in South Africa must register with the authorities and carry a pass at all times. He was sent to jail to serve the first of what would become many prison sentences. While imprisoned, Gandhi became fascinated with the work of Leo Tolstoy and began a correspondence with a Russian writer. When he was released, he started a new community he called Tolstoy Farm. Members made their own clothes and food, built their homes, and educated their children. Many other British laws, including one claiming only Christian marriages were legal, resulted in many more protests by Gandhi and many more imprisonments. Finally, South African leader Jan Christensen Smuts began to relent on some of the most important issues, and Gandhi felt the first satisfaction of victory. He was ready to return to India. On the day he left, Smuts said, "The saint has left our shores, I hope, forever." Many years later, when Gandhi was fighting for the independence of India, Smuts would say, "It had been my fate to be the antagonist of a man for whom, even then, I had the highest respect." Gandhi arrived in Bombay in 1915 at the age of 46 and was welcomed as a hero. He no longer wore Western clothes, and he no longer spoke in English. He had returned to his native tongue of Gujarati. For a year, Gandhi toured India. During this tour, he visited the community set up by the great mystic poet Rabindranath Tagore, the first Indian to win a Nobel Prize. Tagore compared Gandhi's work to the teachings of Buddha, which emphasized compassion and respect for all living creatures. He said, "Perhaps he will not succeed, perhaps he will fail as Christ failed to wean men from their inequities, but he will always be remembered as one who has made his life a lesson for all ages to come." It was Tagore who gave Gandhi the title Mahatma, which means great soul. Outside the city of Ahmedabad, Gandhi founded his own community, the Satyagraha Ashram, based on nonviolence and service to others. From his ashram, Gandhi began a new phase of his work. First, he began to campaign against India's notorious caste system. He brought untouchables into his ashram, even though his own wife protested, and he renamed them Harijans, or Children of God. Then he became involved in labor organizing. He carried out his first political fast, threatening to starve himself to death unless the conditions of the workers in the province of Bihar were improved. Because of his fast, conditions were improved and wages were increased. He also convinced farm workers who were suffering a famine to refuse to pay British taxes. Eventually, the taxes were withdrawn. When World War I hit, Gandhi helped recruit soldiers to fight for the British in hopes their service would earn them the right to independence. but his plan failed, and the British passed even stricter laws, preventing home rule. Gandhi called for a one-day protest, including fasting, prayer, and public meetings. But when troops killed 9 people in Delhi, he was overcome with regret and self-blame, and repented by fasting for 3 days. Then came Amritsar. Amritsar was one of the bloodiest days in the history of British rule, and it was the critical turning point for Mahatma Gandhi. It happened in April 1919, when 15,000 Indians gathered for a peaceful demonstration in honor of the Sikh New Year. Suddenly, government troops appeared. Under the direction of General Reginald Dyer, they opened fire on the unarmed crowd. The Indians were trapped in a square, unable to escape. As the bullets rained down for 10 solid minutes, the people ran, screamed, fell to the ground, and struggled to shield their children. In the end, 400 men, women, and children had been killed and 11,000 wounded. After Amritsar, Gandhi was never the same. His loyalty to the British Empire was completely destroyed, and he dedicated himself with full energy to one cause, the cause of independence. He became leader of the Indian National Congress and initiated an extensive program of non-cooperation with the British. Before Gandhi, the National Congress's main activity each year was a 3-day picnic for the upper class in a selected city of India. After Gandhi, it became a massive grassroots organization that was the most powerful political instrument for achieving Indian independence. Gandhi initiated a nationwide boycott of cotton made in Britain, and throughout the country, Indians made huge bonfires of English materials. It was then that Gandhi took up his famous spinning wheel, a symbol of economic and spiritual freedom. He worked on the spinning wheel every day, and throughout India, others were also spinning, weaving their own cloth and their own pattern of liberty. In 1922, Gandhi, now 53 years old, called on all Indians with government jobs to quit their service to Britain. He launched a boycott of British-run schools, offices, courts, and legislatures. By now, over 30,000 Indians had been imprisoned for acts of protest. But in spite of Gandhi's constant insistence and admonitions, the protests weren't always peaceful. When 22 policemen who attacked a protest march were killed by the marchers, Gandhi fasted again in repentance and called off the mass civil disobedience. Still, he was arrested for sedition and put on trial. At his trial, Gandhi spoke eloquently of the injustices and brutality of English rule, but he admitted he was guilty as charged under British law. The judge called him a man of high ideals and of a noble, even saintly life. Then he sentenced him to 6 years in prison. Gandhi was released from prison in only 2 years, after he had an appendectomy and his jailers feared for his health. He shifted his focus to a different problem, one that grew like a deadly cancer within India herself, one that caused him greater heartache and disappointment than even the oppression by the British. The problem was the conflict among his own people between Hindus and Muslims. He fasted for 3 weeks to protest that conflict, but his protest brought only a temporary peace. Meanwhile, Gandhi was working for social reform in his country. He toured India, often by foot, and spoke to large crowds about the necessity for tolerance, for equality of all citizens, classes, and religions, and for the rights of women. In 1930, at age 60, Gandhi launched the famous Salt March that further strengthened India's resolve to free itself economically from Britain and to resist the laws that restricted its independence. After the Salt March, about 100,000 Indians were arrested, including Gandhi again and several members of the National Congress. Several people were beaten and some were even killed, but eventually the plan was successful and India was permitted to manufacture its own salt. The British government could no longer deny the tremendous power and influence of Mahatma Gandhi. After years of trying to ignore him, repress him, imprison him, and refute him, it finally extended to him an invitation. He was invited to a roundtable discussion in London on the subject of India's future. He was to be the sole representative of India's Congress. Gandhi had already proven himself a brilliant strategist, a superb politician and leader, and one of the most effective activists the world had ever known. Yet behind the very worldly motives and actions was a man who himself had said that his sole goal in life was to see God face to face. Every cause, be it the eradication of the caste system, the harmony between religions, or the independence of India, was to Mahatma Gandhi a spiritual cause. As he set out for India at the end of August 1931 on the SS Rajputana, thousands were at the dock waving him off and praying that his visit would finally move India towards the self-government it had fought so long and hard for. On board the Rajputana was a friend and correspondent of Gandhi's, the great Indian spiritual figure, Meher Baba. Mayor Baba was known to many in India, and to some in the West, as the Silent Master, because he had taken a vow of silence when he was 30, and he kept it the remainder of his life. Baba believed humanity had been given all the words and teachings it needed, and now it was time to live those teachings. His work, he said, was not to teach, but to awaken. Gandhi had made his own vow of silence. On Mondays, he never spoke. He also once described himself as a student of Mayor Baba's ideas. They had exchanged letters about truth, spirituality, God, and the future of India for many years. Now, together on the ship to England, they met many nights in Baba's cabin and talked further of Gandhi's work. Gandhi told Baba, "Whatever I do, I take upon myself the responsibility for it, though in the end, internally, I leave everything to God." When Gandhi arrived in England, he registered at a hostel for the poor in the East End. He visited Lancashire and talked with the mill workers, many of whom had been made jobless by the Indian boycott of English textiles. He met politicians and celebrities and made friends wherever he went. When he arrived for tea at Buckingham Palace, in his usual simple white Indian dress, bare legs and hatless, he commented, "The king was wearing enough for both of us." The round table discussions in England were a charade. The only issue the British opened for discussion was the issue of minorities in India. Home rule was not on the agenda. Gandhi returned to India, where only 1 week later he was once again in prison. Early on, Gandhi had learned to use his time in prison productively. This time he started a fast, to the death if necessary, to rid India of its wretched caste system. The people loved and respected him so much, they were willing to give up this ancient tradition so deeply embedded in their whole culture. For the first time, temples were open to the untouchables, to Gandhi's Harijans. For the first time, the Harijans were allowed to eat and drink side by side, even to marry each other. The ignorant ways of the past were crumbling, but India was still not free. When World War II arrived, Gandhi had come a long way since World War I. This time he opposed Indian involvement in the war, and he opposed the war altogether. He was now a 100% uncompromising pacifist. Other members of the Indian Congress, including Nehru, disagreed. They felt it was worth it for Indians to serve as soldiers if the British would guarantee their independence, but the British would make no such promise. In the middle of the war, in 1942, Gandhi announced a new campaign, the unilateral, unconditional withdrawal of the British from India. The campaign became known as the Quit India Movement. For years, he had negotiated for independence. Now he demanded it. The British response was like most of the responses to Gandhi's new campaigns. He was carted off to prison along with 100,000 other Indians, including his wife, Kasturbai. Kasturbai was in poor health at the time, and the rigors of prison took their toll. She died in 1944 at the age of 75 in Gandhi's arms. Gandhi's grief was great, and he himself became ill. He remained ill until his release from prison 2 months later. Altogether, Mahatma Gandhi spent 7 years of his life behind bars. In 1945, a new party came to power in Britain, the Labour Party, and with it came the door to India's independence. Relations between India and Britain had only worsened during the war, and the new government was willing to listen to proposals for home rule. Now 75 years old himself, but still strong and fiery of spirit, Gandhi once again took on the divisive problems of the Hindus and Muslims. The Muslims, under the leadership of Muhammad Ali Jinnah, wanted to establish their own state in the north of India called Pakistan. Gandhi, like the rest of the Indian Congress, wanted a united India. When Nehru, a Hindu, was appointed Prime Minister of a provisional Indian government, Jinnah called for a day of Muslim protest. The result was disastrous. Muslims and Hindus attacked each other in the streets, and terrible atrocities were committed on both sides. By the time peace was restored, 20,000 people had been killed. Gandhi walked through India for 4 months, visiting villages and cities trying to promote tolerance and peace. Against his wishes and without his vote of support, the Indian National Congress agreed to the separate nation of Pakistan, to be carved out of India's northern territory. Yet the fighting between Muslims and Hindus continued. Meanwhile, Britain had come up with its Mountbatten Plan, a plan that offered India its independence, but also granted the Muslims their own separate dominion in Pakistan. In 1947, Lord Louis Mountbatten arrived in India to serve as the last British viceroy. It was a pivotal moment in world history. The loss of India was the first step in the dissolution of the British Empire. Its colonies in Asia and Africa would soon follow India's lead. When the independence of India was announced on August 15, 1947, Gandhi was staying in the poorest section of Calcutta, where some of the worst riots were occurring. Independence was a bittersweet victory. He had fought almost 40 years for this day, and yet even as it occurred, millions of Indians were fleeing their newly freed country for the new lands of Pakistan. Massacres were occurring all along the route, and in cities all over India. 1 million Indians had been killed. India had gained her freedom, but she had lost her peace. It was the greatest disappointment of Gandhi's life that Indian freedom was accomplished without Indian unity. When the city of Delhi was torn by violence and riots, Gandhi began his last and greatest fast. Day after day, the Indian public watched while he grew even thinner and weaker, until he could barely whisper. Finally, when he was but a step away from death, Muslims and Hindus alike agreed to lay down their arms. For the moment, peace was restored throughout India and Pakistan. 12 days later, Gandhi was on his way to a prayer meeting in New Delhi. He was surrounded by his followers and friends, and he was cheerful. The bloodshed had been stopped. India, although not united, was free and, for the moment, was at peace. The day was January 30, 1948, and Gandhi was 79 years old. There was no time to stop the man who leapt from the crowd and dove as if to kiss Gandhi's feet. When he rose, they could see a pistol in his hand. He fired 3 shots into Gandhi's abdomen and chest. Gandhi muttered, "Hai Rama, O God," and fell to the ground. The assassin was a Hindu fanatic who blamed the creation of Pakistan on Gandhi. Gandhi's son, Ramdas, lit the fire on his funeral pyre. Gandhi had once told his followers that if he was killed, they were not to shed one tear. But the command was too hard to obey. As the flames climbed into the sky, loud wails burst from the huge crowd of mourners. Then it was silent. At sunset, a boat carried Gandhi's ashes onto the river Ganges, and Ramdas scattered his father's ashes over the water. The entire world mourned the passing of Mahatma Gandhi. In America, the great scientist Albert Einstein said, "Generations to come will scarcely believe that such a one as this walked the earth in flesh and blood." Today, Mahatma Gandhi is honored by Indians as the father of their country. To the rest of the world, he is much, much more. Gandhi's life and work were guided by his search for and dedication to the truth. To Gandhi, God alone was truth, and all he did as an expression of his understanding of how that truth could be served. He believed the basis of truth was compassion and tolerance for all people, no matter their class, religion, gender, or politics, and regardless of how they behaved. Unlike other spiritual aspirants, who sought their God in isolated caves or remote temples, who pursued the truth in solitary meditation or ritual, Gandhi sought his God in the world, through his work with and for his fellow human beings. Mahatma Gandhi became history's greatest example of nonviolence in action. To achieve this goal, he had to develop tremendous courage, even though he himself said he had been shy and cowardly when young. He overcame his fear and inspired others to do the same. Ordinary people in the presence of Gandhi became heroes. The legacy he left to us was an idea, the idea that even people in struggle should never violate the sanctity of human life, and that one's behavior and actions are far more important than the results achieved. Yet he also proved, as few others have, that nonviolence can be a powerful and persuasive method of social change and cultural transformation. He is among the few in the entire political history of the world whose success was based on selfless love in action.
This is the end of the session.